morning, everybody. It's Friday with Jim here at Coast Community Radio. Happy to have you with us on this beautiful day. We're going to be visiting today with Leanne Thompson, who's a candidate for County Commission from South County. And her opponent, Dale Barrett, will come in next week so that we'll have kind of an equal opportunity interview. Thanks for being with us.
Oh, Jim, it's my pleasure.
I'd like you to tell me a little bit about your youth when you're growing up, going to school, all that kind of stuff.
I like to say I'm corn-fed Midwestern. I was born and raised in Lansing, Michigan, went to Michigan State, got an undergraduate degree, English, psychology, history, whatever else I wanted to take then. Went down to Ann Arbor, got a master's degree from the University of Michigan in social work with groups. Moved into Detroit when Detroit was Murder City back in the early 1970s. After a few years there, moved on to Anchorage, Alaska. After some wonderful years there, moved on to Portland. Then got lucky enough to get a house out here 15 years ago. 10 years ago, began to live here as a local. And that's the best 10 years ever.
So you're happy being a resident of the North Coast?
Makes me very happy.
I noticed that you're giving me a little worksheet here on some of the stuff you do, and it seems to me that you're really involved in volunteer work. Maybe you could talk a little bit about some of the stuff you do.
That's one of the greatest joys, because people volunteer in order to make a positive difference in their communities. They volunteer in order to join with like-minded folk. They volunteer from love and creative imagination and just a heartfelt desire to do good work. And I love that. It also addresses important unmet needs in our community. I've been involved since 2007, 2008 with community preparedness. So I'm a community emergency response team leader and trainer. I'm also president of the Sunset Empire Amateur Radio Club, so I get to hang out with the techno nerds, and I say that with the greatest respect and affection. I'm a Red Cross volunteer, and all of that is to help us form positive community relationships, because when push comes to shove, we're not going to be able to buy our way out of situations, whether it's a wildland fire, a Cascadia subduction earthquake and tsunami, whether it's landslides and floods, whether, no matter what it is, we're going to have to depend on each other and what we're able to accomplish together out of the goodness of our hearts and our skill sets. So all that's very interesting to me, but I love food. I love to eat. I had an aunt and uncle who were organic farmers, so I've been going to farmers markets ever since I can remember. I believe in cooperation and teamwork, so when I went down to graduate school in the early 1970s in Ann Arbor, Michigan, holy smokes, it was a wealthy community. There were two food co-ops, and I joined both of them. And then came into Detroit and worked with a volunteer group, three for three. We got three bags of groceries for $3. I mean, it was the early 70s, you can imagine. But we went to the market in Detroit, got the food, bought it, put it into bags, and distributed it so that people in inner city Detroit could have healthy food at affordable prices. I mean, that's the best. I've continued that here with being involved with the Cannon Beach Backpack program, where we packed backpacks full of food for hungry children, and I'm on that board as well. So yeah, community work is good.
Now, it seems to me that when the Cascadia subduction zone happens, it's fairly certain that it's going to happen, probably within the next 50 to 100 years, it's going to totally destroy Cannon Beach, Seaside, and Warrenton. And how do you prepare for total chaos?
What a good question. See, the first thing that's required to deal with anything that's bigger than we know how to deal with, first wake up and realize it. Doesn't matter whether it's a Cascadia subduction zone earthquake. It doesn't matter if it's global climate change. It doesn't matter if it's species extinction. It doesn't matter what it is. First, we have to wake up and say, oh, we have a problem. What are we going to do? And so I think there are three phases. There's preparation. There's response during the crisis phase. And then there's resilience and recovery. And I'm involved in the former and the last because I didn't say this, but I'm vice chair of the Clatsop County Planning Commission. So as we prepare, we look at the zoning laws and think about how do we shift them? How do we get access to some of that uphill land so that we get ourselves out of the inundation zone and make preparations so that people who get themselves up there too are able to go through the crisis and then either go home if they're tourists and they want to go home, or some of us say, you know, this isn't for me anymore. Or we say, you know, this is my home. I love it here. I want to help rebuild. I want to see people flourish here. So there's a project. Representative Boone has been instrumental in raising the awareness of the state legislature and taking effective action so that we can analyze our problem. She's really an inspiration. She's so bright and capable. Senator Johnson, too. I mean, what a great team to have as our public servants. And so we're working on it, and there's a lot more to be done. I like to say what everybody can do. This is just, it's so small. But if everybody puts a pair of durable shoes and socks under their nightstand, so if there's an earthquake, they don't get cut feet from broken glass. That's the most common injury, is cut feet from broken glass after an earthquake. And if you really want to be a little better prepared, then the next step is get yourself one of those lovely helmets from ProBuild, those hard hats. They're not expensive. And get a little headlamp on it. So then if something happens in the middle of the night, because our warning for the Cascadia, you know, it's going to be in the middle of the night. There's going to be sideways rain. I don't know. It could happen anywhere. That's the whole problem. We don't know where we're going to be, and we don't know when it's going to happen, and we don't know how bad it's going to be. So it makes sense to wake up, take a look at the problem, and then start taking small steps toward addressing your own preparation. Then work with your neighbors to deal with the crisis, and then elect people like myself, I think, who will actually help us build our capacity to be resilient, to flourish after that.
Well, my understanding of what's going to happen when the subduction zone earthquake happens and the interface between the two tectonic plates start scraping along with each other, we're going to have a substantial earthquake, a violent earthquake. And then about 20 minutes later, we're going to have a tsunami. And it seems to me that kind of scenario precludes a lot of getting out of the way kind of thing. It's going to happen too quick. So you're going to have thousands of people that are become inundated and a lot of dead bodies. And so how do you prepare for that?
First you wake up. First you wake up. And then you see, is this a risk I want to take on? Because if it's not for you, for heaven's sakes, go where you can live your life with joy and satisfaction. And if this is it, stay here. Happy to have you here. If this isn't it, take care of yourself. Don't be surprised. So here's what I tell people. The design of human existence. First we're born, and then we live, and then what happens?
Are you asking me? Then
we die, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Okay, so everybody's going to die someplace, somehow. Nobody gets out of this alive. Just doesn't happen. So I thought about it, because I have family and friends back in Michigan where I grew up. Do I want to go back to Michigan? Well, I love to visit. I want to be here. This is the place where I feel at home. When I smell that ocean air, when I look around and I see the forests, when I see the mountains, I love it. And I love to be with other people who love it. So this is the place for me, because I'm going to die someplace somehow, and I want to be here.
Now you have, I'm trying to read this, I'm not reading it, but you have a small business here, is that correct? Talk about that a little bit.
Well, I'll refer you to Steve Forrester's column.
Please.
On Wednesday, where he said the number one skill for politicians is being able to learn new things. So at age 65, I enrolled myself in a course to learn how to be a professional life coach.
What's that?
Exactly. It teaches people the necessary skills so they can look around and see what's true about their physical reality. How much money do I have? How much energy do I have? But most important, what's my reason for being here? What are my particular causes, gifts, skills? For me, the teaching and learning game is paramount. I love it. I got the chance to teach at Clatsop Community College. It was the best. It was the best to be able to be with people in that learning game. So that's the kind of thing that matters to me. For you, maybe it's something different. Everybody gets to see, what is it that's special about me? What matters to me? What kind of person do I want to be? What kind of things do I want to accomplish? And then a coach helps people see, what steps do I take to bring that vision, that heartfelt longing, into physical material reality? And so I want to do that not just for individuals, but for whole communities. That's why I want to be on the County Board of Commissioners, because it's a 5-member, nonpartisan, volunteer board. What do? They set policies. How many employees do they have? Only one, the county manager. They hold the county manager accountable for implementing the policies that they've set and accomplishing the goals that matter to them, that they think will satisfy this whole county, this whole community.
I notice on your resume that you've worked with DGAMI. What does that stand for?
It has nothing to do with four-legged critters.
Right.
It's about the Department of Geology and Mineral Industries.
Okay.
And Don Hull up in Cannon Beach, so inspiring, moved them from being an agency that just cared about abandoned nickel mines in eastern Oregon to the agency that looked at, how do we prepare for whatever the natural world is going to throw at us? And they got a grant to develop new information about our exposure to risk from the tsunami that will come after a Cascadia subduction zone earthquake. I got the wonderful chance to work with Peter Ovington and Rachel Smith, amazing people, our own local Tom Horning.
I was going to ask you about Tom.
Oh, Tom Horning, Tsunami Tommy, right? That's what his brother called him. These are people who want to help us be better. Now, sometimes the medicine's a little bitter. Wait, you mean I'm going to die? Yep, you're going to die. Help have more control over the circumstances of your life and your death so that you can live a happy, satisfying life and realize that death is inevitable for all of us. So let's have a good time and do good for each other and ourselves in the meantime. Let's use ourselves well. Let's take our skills. Let's use our creative imagination. Let's put them to work together in the physical world.
It sounds like kind of a form of productive hedonism.
I suppose a person might look at it that way. I mean, we'll all put it in our own language, but if that floats your boat and that gets you inspired and that gets you in action, yes. Yes, absolutely. Because it's an individual reality, and we join hands and hearts and minds together to work.
Well, it's time to remind our listeners that it's Coast Community Radio here at KMUN, and we're visiting this Friday with Leanne Thompson, who's a candidate for County Commission, And she's running against Dale Barrett, a surveyor from Gearhart, who will be speaking with next week. Appreciate you being here, Leanne.
It really, truly is my joy.
Now, one of the issues that's been kind of controversial around the North Coast is this proposal to either import or export liquefied natural gas from property over on the Skipanon Peninsula. What's your view of that?
Well, here's the thing. There's no doubt that this is an extremely important issue in this community, and it impacts all of us. The Daily A published a map that showed the blast zone should there be an accident, and it included a wide swath of territory. So I say to people down in where I live, down in the south part of Clatsop County on the coast, so, do you ever go to Costco? Do you ever go to the Home Depot? Do you ever go to Astoria? If so, this applies to you. Do you ever visit friends? Do you ever go to Washington? You know, this is a community issue for all of us. So that's why it's so important. Three things I want to tell you about it, Jim. Number one, I've been a civil law enforcement person beginning in 1968 when I started out as a public assistance caseworker. And I worked with people so that we all followed the law. I worked myself up into administration in Michigan. So I worked for the number one guy as we enforced the Code of Federal Regulations, state statute, state administrative rule, and developed policies and procedures. I've written those, and it's familiar territory for me. When I moved to Alaska, after I spent some time directing a senior center in Anchorage and then working as a psychological counselor in a medium security correctional facility for adult male offenders, in other words, in a prison, I was a statewide program head all over the state of Alaska, which, as you probably know, take five Texas to make one Alaska. So it's a quarter of the land mass of the continental United States. And if you superimposed a map of Alaska on the U.S., the tip of the Aleutians would be in, I think, San Diego, and the tip of the Panhandle would be in Charleston, West Virginia. It's huge. So to manage a statewide program in that state took a lot. Then I came down here to Oregon, and I again ran a statewide program, this time for the licensing of healthcare professionals. So when you look at the law, I have extensive experience in interpreting and applying policies that are derived from laws. So when I tell you, number one, I will enforce the law fairly and expertly to the best of my ability. I'm not just blowing smoke. I have a body of experience that supports that claim. Number two, I have spoken with people whom I consider to be experts in the field, a pipeline engineer, a retired utility executive, and what they said to me was that they both opposed a liquefied natural gas pipeline and facility because they were dangerous. They represented a public danger. What they said was, when natural gas escapes a pipeline, it burns. When liquefied natural gas escapes a pipeline, it explodes. To me, that's cause for grave concern. We have to consider. And number three, I don't think we're forced to accept this. Some people think, oh yeah, we just throw up our hands, we say, they're going to do it to us no matter what, just accept it. I don't believe that. I believe that if we keep electing leaders who develop community systems, that we can develop alternatives, alternatives to the use of that energy, alternatives that are environmentally sustainable, that are locally owned, and that really that support a diverse economy here, so we don't have to depend on the few jobs that would derive from that kind of development. But number one, let me just reiterate, number one, I will enforce the law.
Well, some people look at LNG as kind of a bridge fuel to power the economy until these alternative scenarios are able to be developed. I heat my house with natural gas. Mm-hmm. And in the wintertime, it's real nice to be able to turn it on and get warm. But, you know, a little while ago we were talking about the subduction zone earthquake and the resultant tsunami. It seems to me, given that scenario, putting the storage tank on tideland within the inundation zone is really kind of foolish. And have you looked or thought about alternative sites for the storage of this stuff?
I haven't. That's not my job as I see it. My job, as I see it, is to look at developing redundant systems. I used to hang out with the techie folks, right? And they would say, essential redundancy. So for myself, I got a heat pump. I have a backup wood stove and fuel for that. So that's my individual personal solution.
So when the power goes out, the heat pump will be non-functional.
Exactly. And the wood stove, the chimney may not work, but you know what? I'm going to keep on going until I find out what I need to find out to be able to feel comfortable with my own resilience. And I'm going to help other people do that. See, my little house, 3 blocks back from the ocean, 130 feet elevation. Just dumb luck on my part. But I love it. And I'll tell you, I let people know where I live. So if there's an event and they're driving by on Highway 101, I say, come to my house because I have supplies. If we do that for each other, it's like loaves and fishes. And that's what it will take. Jim, we're in such a period of realization. Oh, look, we're engaged with complex interlocking systems. How do we deal with that? We start with ourselves. We increase our own awareness and our own skill set, our own preparation, physical steps that we take in the physical world, and then we collaborate with each other because we are going to need each other. We're going to have to be able to get along. We're going to have to be able to work collaboratively.
Do you have a firearm to protect yourself in the event of emergencies?
I have my mouth.
Okay. You know, another thing that the county commission is involved in is economic development. And I'm curious about some of your ideas regarding generating economic development here on the North Coast.
I've worked with Kevin at Cedar, and I think Cedar is an amazing opportunity to grow new businesses. Here's what I'd say about the County Commission. Anybody who says, yep, I'm going to be the newest elected member of the County Commission, and I'm going to come on, and here's my program, and I'm going to achieve it. It's like, really? You understand that this is a volunteer board of 5 people. And if you can't convince at least 2 other people, and hopefully all four other people, then how are you going to get anything done? So I want to come on and listen to what my more experienced peers have to say. Dirk Rohn's been on that County Board of Commissioners a while now. Scott Lee has too, and so has Sarah Nebaker. Lisa Tarabakia Clement is coming on. I'm looking forward to working with them as we discover collaboratively what's the best way to proceed. I'm not going to come on and say, I just got here, I'm going to tell you all what to do.
But certainly you have some ideas of your own regarding economic development. And these are arguments I understand you'll present to the rest of the commission. But just for now, maybe you could outline some of the things you're thinking about.
One of the things I'd like to do is to add value to our timber. I'd much rather see us not export raw logs. To me, that smacks of being a colony. I'd rather not. I'd rather bring in green industries that make use of the skill set that we have a lot of unemployed and underemployed loggers and woodworkers. you know, the community college has been excellent in having their historic preservation program. How can we use our natural resources? Smart. We need to be smart. We need to produce value, and we need to find ways to get it to market. I talked with John Baratus at Craft 3 because I had this idea we could have a factory where we produced structurally integrated panels. And he said, Leanne, what you need is money. Well, I know some money people from my work in Portland. I sat on the Tax Supervising and Conservation Commission and worked with money people. So, okay, I figure I can get some money. Number two, you need somebody to run the factory. Well, okay, I figure I know people who can find somebody to run the factory. The thing that stopped me was his third point. Oh, you have to change people's buying habits. Oh, well, that takes more of a position than I have right now. That takes a position like being a member of the Clatsop County Board of Commissioners. So, here I am running, because I'd like to see us get smart people together and create ideas that are viable to use our natural resources so that we produce value instead of taking minimum wage.
But we're actually 100 miles from the I-5 corridor, which contains the bulk of the population in the Northwest. And given that fact, what can we do here, isolated that we are, to generate economic development for ourselves?
Isn't that a good conversation to have with the Port of Astoria?
You know, I understand the port is actually starting to act rationally.
Here's... Oh, Jim, I won't touch that with a 10-foot pole. Here's what I'll say. I have great respect for Bob Mushin. I have great respect for John Reichel. I think they'll make a positive difference wherever
they are.
Wherever they're involved. I think it gives all of us new hope that the good people who have been doing good work at the port will have reinforcements now and will have a stronger port that's a better partner in that economic development, because the port's essential in all that, no matter what good we're producing. Now, if we're providing services, if we in our beautiful natural environment said, why aren't we a center of healing? Why don't we have centers here that would provide rehabilitation, mental and physical rehabilitation? I mean, people come here as tourists to relax, to refresh, to recreate. Why not do it thoughtfully in a way that makes more money at a higher level of skill than simply service jobs for tourists?
You know, Eric Thorson over at Columbia Memorial Hospital is thinking along those same lines, and he's doing a lot to develop Astoria as a healthcare center for the surrounding areas, and it's starting to come together.
See? Good ideas, good people coming together, and the, you know, synergy some people scoff at. If you call it something more complex like interlocking systems, economic development, it's the same thing. How do we get good ideas? How do we work together? How do we create them in physical reality? Have fun, do good, make money.
Now, you mentioned the port. You know, the port has a bunch of industrial property out at the airport. Big flat areas that could be developed. Infrastructure is close by. What kind of industries would you anticipate could be interested in doing something there?
It sounds like you've given it some thought. What do you have in mind?
For the airport?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I haven't given any thought, but I do know that the infrastructure exists, the property exists. And certainly one of the port's goals is economic development, but what I'm getting at is, what kind of ideas do you have that could be utilized in that location?
I think you want to give me a job that I'm not ready to be specific about. I'm not there yet. This kind of question can be answered only by being there and interacting with the people. I mean, if you talk to me in a year, you can bet. If you talk to me in 6 months, I'm going to have clear ideas. I've tried to get myself involved just as a volunteer. I don't have the standing for it as a volunteer. oh, okay, well, then I'll get myself elected, and then I'll have standing, because I know how important jobs are. Look, I'm from Michigan. I'm already an economic refugee. I could see where the car industry was heading. It was headed downhill. It was headed off a cliff. So I hot-footed for Alaska, learned a lot, had a wonderful time, boom and bust economy, got hungry for real summer, and an ocean that I could step into more often, came down here, so here I am. So let's bring all of our collective experience together, all of our longing, our desires, our good ideas, let's put them into physical reality. So you're somebody who's going to be on my list to call. Get ready.
I'm ready.